you need to build a really good relationship with your residents community. I think it's very important. In my experience, I guess, you know, it is fishing, right? You got to throw the line out there and be patient because you don't know when the fish is going to bite. So in relative to this story, I love analogies. We had been looking at this deal since November of last year. Huge, like a whole year ago, you know, and we had made an offer. And honestly, they were trying to trade this property at $10 million.
You're listening to the Active Duty Passive Income Podcast, the number one resource for active duty veterans and their families who want to learn how to build real wealth through real estate investing. Each week, we sit down with top military real estate investors, industry experts, and leaders who share their secrets to success in the real estate game. Now, get off your ass, get motivated, and take action to make your financial freedom dreams a reality.
Before we get started with today's show, I have to let my faithful ADPI podcast family in on a little secret. For the past year, we've been hard at work trying to consolidate all of our Epic resources into one community-based platform to damn near guarantee our member success. I'm proud to announce the launch of ADPI Campus, our off-Facebook, all-in-one platform dedicated to helping the military community own more of the land they swore to protect and defend. From networking to live workshops to courses, masterminds, cohorts, and even one-on-one coaching, ADPI Campus is the community for military real estate investors worldwide. Sign up for your free trial of ADPI Campus at www.adpicampus.com, where you'll get complete access to our brand new bootcamp mini course and our exclusive deal room where you can list, connect, buy, and sell deals alongside other military real estate investors. That's www.adpicampus.com to sign up now for free. Do it now before it's too late. Now, let's start the show. Hey, what's going on, ADPI Nation? This is your host, Kevin Brenner, and I have another fabulous guest on the Active Duty Passive Income Podcast. Today's show, we're going to be talking multifamily real estate investing, but this is kind of homegrown. This is one of our members, our community members, recently super active. He's got a deal under contract. We're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about his background and how he's applied what he's learned over the last 20-ish years into something that's relatively new for him personally on the, you know, he's been close to it, but now he's going to be in it. And I think making that bridge and making that connection is super important to understand, because you could be doing something, whether you're in the military or on the outside, doing something that is somewhat related to real estate, but you can like never actually get into the real estate ownership side, like i.e. the real estate agent who is so close to deals left, right, and center, but doesn't actually own any deals. You know, like making that bridge and making that connection and having the confidence to say, hey, I've been doing this for so long, or I've been around people or owners, or I've been consulting with owners for so long doing X, Y, or Z. Why can't I do this myself? And then having the confidence to say that you can do it yourself. I think that is like the first step that you need to take. Like, if this person can do it, if so-and-so can do it, so can I. And we recently had Joshua Serrano on the podcast with a very similar story, where it was, hey, if this person can become a virtual wholesaler, so can I. And, you know, and he's crushing it. And Ken, our guest today, will be sharing his story of how he is going after that right now and will no doubt crush it in the near future. So Ken Nieves, welcome to the show.
Kevin, thank you for having me. Appreciate your time, sir. As you know, Ken Nieves, I've been in ADPI for almost a month and a half now, enjoying every bit of it, enjoying networking amongst you guys. And I'm looking very forward to the success that I'll venture with ADPI and on my own as well. So my background, interesting as that is, I was Navy, prior Navy guy. I'm veteran now. I did 11 years in the Navy, and I got to journey everywhere from Japan to local in the States. And my job rate on there, unique as it was a MU. I was a musician. I played guitar. I was gifted with the musician skills to be able to pray for the president, tons of commanders and officers for all their christenings and their events that they would have. And come out of that, after I got out about 2010, 2011, I decided I needed to get a job, do something. I started applying for some positions federally. Somebody really good in the Air Force showed me how to and helped me with my transitioning of my resumes. So I therefore repaid that back to a lot of veterans and helped them write their resumes and started getting pretty successful. So about after 300, I was nailing it and I was applying everywhere and I got picked up by the Housing and Urban Development. So I want to say that I wasn't looking for real estate back at that time. It found me. And in the success of that, I learned and got picked up through Housing and Urban Development in their asset management program. Their team basically does focus on multifamily as an asset management. I sit there and did their risk assessment with their low income Section 8 elderly handicap programs. And from there on, I sustained a career that I thought I was going to finish out the rest of my career with them for like 10, 12, 13 years. I had a portfolio count of at least 96 properties between Texas mm-hmm. all the way to Colorado, Utah. And in that amount of doors, I would say I serviced about over 3,000 units, as wow. everybody will recognize. And then from there on, I got picked up by the IRS in their commercial real estate, where I'm currently at. That's my W-2. So from there on, I currently have a portfolio of about 54 buildings that I oversight between here in Oklahoma. And it's a great job. It's a very small niche. There's only 16 of us across the United States. And I was just blessed and fortunate to be hired and selected for that position. I cut my teeth with HUD, which got me into the IRS, but I was recruited right away and picked up. So in the midst of all that experience, it was about 18 months ago that I got approached by the HR department saying, hey, would you like to retire early? You know, and at that point, I wasn't ready. But it did make a light bulb go off. And I was like, well, maybe there's something more that I can do coming up, think of something. So I can, you know, create an early retirement. And that's where passive income in real estate hit me right in the face. I've been looking at it and doing all this time, and I never thought about really pursuing it until right then and there with the experience that I currently have. And then from there, I started targeting education. So I basically did these three things. I invested in myself first, which means mm-hmm. I went out there and got the proper education. And I mean a little bit more than just reading everybody's methods and books. I really started getting into it with some other membership masterminds. And then sure. I followed up coming into the ADPI. And then from there on, I decided to go to the next movement. So my next movement was invest in my business. So from there on, I started getting an LLC, you know, reaching out, being building bridges with other investors like myself and building relationships. And then after that, my third phase was investing in the asset. That's where we're currently at. So I'm looking at a deal that I have on the table. I'm looking at other deals, building teams, building relationships. That's what this really is all about. And having that success of getting, you know, a deal like I currently have, which is a deal in San Angelo, Texas for 142 units across the table. So that's where I'm currently at. That's been the gist of my experience. I am a experienced asset manager role player. That's my forte. I will say this to all the other members that just because you're an AM guy doesn't mean that deal's going to come to your table. You have to go look for it. So you also have to bleed into another role. For me, I found that in Texas, it's so large. There's a lot of opportunity here that you have to assume a deal sourcing acquisitions position. And if you can do that and you can just reach out to brokers, you'll be a little bit more successful in having stuff come to you as you reach out to it. And that's worked for me so far here in Texas, where I'm kind of double dipping. I'm deal acquisitions and then I'm also asset management on both sides. Desperately dying to really hone in on the asset management position, but I can only really get there once I get a deal closer to the PSA.
Right.
And then I can assume that role.
So Ken, let me stop you there, because I want to people who don't understand what asset management is, can you give a more detailed description of what you were doing when you were at HUD, when you say you had these assets that you were managing? I mean, there were different programs, right? There were sure. tons of different programs. And then what you were doing at the IRS and how that experience has kind of, you know, like you said, you had that light bulb moment where you're like, man, I should just get out and do this. Like, what exactly were you doing, and how do those skills that you've learned over the last 13-ish plus years, how are they translating into what you want to become, and how have they translated as you got this 142 unit deal under contract, which is awesome, by the way.
Thank you, sir. The For HUD, what I learned there was risk management, very important. And under those stipulations was making sure that the assets that the current government holds in their programs don't go under foreclosure. So I was constantly checking budgets, checking everything with the PMs in direct relations with the property management agents, making sure that the property, or I'll AKA call it the ship in naval terms, is floating and sailing and targeting the whole period of the life cycle. We never want it to fall below the depths and sink. We want to keep it float. And basically my responsibility was the risk assessment, making sure that the budgets, the renewals, the contracts, the leases that need to be increased, the releases of the reserves, for all this in detail with the property management entities, make sure that we stabilize these projects and keep them, projecting over the whole period. And HUD contracts are not like 5 to 7 to 8, which is learning for me here as being an investor. Their terms were 20 years, wow. 40 years, right?
Now, did HUD own these buildings?
No, HUD did not own them, but they held the FHA loans.
Okay. So HUD held the FHA loans for this is a lot of low income housing. So yeah, let's dig into this a little bit, because I think it'd be helpful for our listeners to understand more practically like how that side of multifamily works, right? So like you're on both sides, right? You were on the HUD side and now you're on the ownership side, right? So like let's just go out and use an example of like, let's say you or someone you know is going to buy a property and it's a low income housing property and they want to get HUD as a partner. How does that even work?
So you'll draft up a concept. You'll submit it to the development production team at HUD. You'll come in with the inquiry. Almost everything what we're doing now, where we're talking to a lender, HUD is going to be like, they're not officially the lender, but they work with the financial housing agency, which is going to be the lender, right? And considering that about 3 to 5 years ago, HUD was the only people in town giving off millions and millions of high millions of loans for risk capital, right? So they might still be doing that. And at that time, they were giving incredible cheap interest rates. We're talking 1% to 2%, nothing over 3%. Wow. So a lot of investors with new development, if they came in and they committed and obligated a certain term or amount of units, they could get tax-free property, interest-free. Terms on their risk for their lending. And my job in asset manager was to make sure that their property stays afloat, it doesn't go into troubled waters, and that they keep their debt service at least 1.25 and consistent, if not growing.
And the debt service coverage ratio, yeah, right? Which explains like, hey, if you're below one, that means that the cash flow that you're coming in doesn't cover the debt service, which is really bad.
Correct.
So that means that you're effectively underwater. So the standard for our listeners out there, it's 1.25 in commercial real estate. If your cash flow can be at least 1.25 times the debt service, then that is like the minimum threshold to get approved lending, pretty much.
Yeah, I didn't mean to go too far outside of what some of the...
No. I'm just bringing it back. I'm bringing it back.
Thank you. I go all over the place. Yeah, then what some of the... Then our novice members will know. But yes, that's correct. So, I held a big portfolio, and the portfolio just kept getting larger and larger and larger. You know that with government, it seems like the work shareload gets more, but the employee staffing gets smaller. But in the gist of it, that's it. And we use their metric systems, their software, everything when you're working for the government to make sure that their assets don't foreclose, because the government's going to have to pay on those, on the foreclosed assets, and the property going to deposition, which means you'll lose the property. There was always issues in my experience where you really had to focus in with a property management agent. And that's where I have experience, where I get to portfolio oversight and go into the depths of the property management agent. If they're not doing something right, I would have to ask why. Why is there occupancy issues? Why is there delinquency issues? Why do we have lost the lease issues where we're not, raising the rents and getting them up close to where we can? In most occurrences, for that example, it's not like what we investors will see, because their rents are regulated.
Right. Because this is like, we're talking like Section 8 vouchers and things like that.
Section 8 programs that I would be monitoring. Right. So owners would love to be able to hit target market rents, right? But ideally, we had to only give them 3%, maybe 5% of an increase if the property was stressed. And there lies some benefits for programs like that, if anybody's interested in a program like that, right? Which I know some people are in our membership. If the property gets stressed, how do they relieve that? Well, they'll reduce the interest rate. If you're at a 3%, they'll easily go down to 1% to throw more cash into the property. You can get that pre-negotiated with your lender. And outside of that, they would just do little occurrences like that to make sure that the property's thriving, you know? And it was up to us for portfolio oversight to make sure that we're working with the property management entities. And very seldom, at least that I have, a lot of stress property managers that I had to replace. You know, you can always threaten that and say, hey, look, you guys aren't doing good. Let's replace you and put somebody else in there. But they have different departments. One is an asset team that just keeps all the properties stabilized. And then they have another one for properties that are stressed. And then they would have two teams. One would work on stressed properties. The other one would work just on stabilizing your current portfolio. It's too much. You know, I personally think on the investor side, now that I'm on the outside, I'm thinking, you know, how many can I attain? And ideally I was thinking, man, I can go 40 and go 45 on my own as my own asset management group. But then ideally I was like, no, really, if I'm concentrating on my personal portfolio, I'm thinking five, maybe 10. And then I want to get another reliable asset management on a team and tag team, you know, right, with another partner.
Because there's a lot of work. Yeah. And when you say five or 10, that's five or 10 different multifamily properties in your portfolio
that
you're managing.
Right.
Yeah. So, you know, as an asset manager is one of these roles, you know, one of these roles. And if you're in the Military Multifamily Academy, you know this already. If you're not, there's four main roles in a multifamily or in a commercial real estate investing team. And one of them is the asset manager. They have the acquisition specialist. You have your capital raiser and you have your underwriter. Like those four are kind of like your go-to. Now, of course, you can have some other people in there as well that, you know, do things, or can, like you were saying, you could have a dual hat situation where you're the asset manager and the acquisition specialist, until once we get it under contract and we get it across the table, then boom, I'm the asset manager and Sally's the, moving on to different aspects of the deal. But when we talk generally about a general partnership team, those are the four big ones. So you touched on it briefly. Besides, you know, talking to property managers, what else is the asset manager doing day to day, like after a property is closed?
Well, right off the bat, you are assessing with the PM, monitoring and controls is what I call it, right? Mm-hmm. So you want to make sure that you have good data software. So you can start receiving the data that's going to be collecting from your property management. If you're smaller in a smaller unit group, say 8 units, you might want to be doing that yourself, where you will also be the property manager and the asset management team. But from all six purposes, if you are on the asset management team and you're working with a property management, then you'll need controls and monitor system. The monitor system means you need to know the market trends. You're going to have to work one-on-one with the property management agent to inquire and ask why. Ask, you know, what is your current competitive market trends of our competitor across the street? Are they at $900 on rents while we're at $800? If so, can we push up the scale a little bit to get up to what the current competitor market trends are, right? And you constantly need to be monitoring this from week to week, month to month, and have a good property management team that can help facilitate that with you. The controls are where you're monitoring such things as your construction, right? So if you want to appreciate this property and do it rather quickly, then you'll want to monitor your construction costs, bring down the expenses, and being able to control, monitor all those type of things as far as your construction and capital X costs, because this is big, right? Your job as far as asset management oversight is to control your expenses, complete have oversight, and make sure that you can increase the revenue. You know, I do like personally when I get into the weeds. I think this is also important. This is just me, but you need to build a really good relationship with your resident community. I think it's very important. You want to attain retention keep those tenants happy, retain them is so much cheaper than turn around and getting somebody
new ones.
Bringing on new ones. Yeah.
So that's really interesting. So, you know, from a 30,000 foot view, the asset manager, they're overseeing the business plan and the implementation of the business plan. When we're talking about, hey, we need to do a value add, we need to manage the contractors and manage the property managers and make sure they're getting along and all of that stuff, but having kind of a data dashboard. So you do have to, you know, you can't be completely shy of numbers. You got to be somewhat in tune to what's going on the numbers side. You don't have to be like a complete deal underwriter and just be buried in spreadsheets 24/7. But as an asset manager, you got to be pretty good with numbers because you need to make sure that you're hitting your target metrics. And really, you're kind of like the COO of the business, you know, the chief operating officer. It's your job as the asset manager to make sure that the business plan gets implemented and everything's on time and it's not over budget, like you said. And, you know, having those discussions with your property management team and saying like, hey, you know, what's the market saying? Why is this person at 900 and we're at 800? What can we be doing better? Because ultimately, the more bottom line that you can extract out of your deal, the higher valuation your business or your real estate property, your multifamily property becomes, because it's all about that cap rate, and the NOI is a huge factor in that. So if you can increase that net operating income by reducing expenses and increasing revenue in whichever way that you want to do it, your valuation is going to go up. You'll be able to exit at a much higher rate, and therefore your investors will be very, very happy with you and be willing to back you on future opportunities. And, you know, you're going to make a lot of money yourself. So ultimately, like as an asset manager, it is a lot of there's leadership roles in there. There's numbers in there. There's project management in there. It's kind of got this like mixed bag of everything. And, you know, the great thing about you personally, Ken, is you did this for 13 years with HUD. So you're very familiar with those programs. So if you wanted to implement those, and I don't even know if you, do you plan on implementing those in the deal that you have under contract? Like is this going to be like a low income housing deal?
No, we're not going to go for that. We're going to get this steal of a deal and late, Kevin, I haven't given you the latest, but we went in to retrade. We went in from a 6.25 to a 5.7 offer. And a lot of this was because I can't tell you how much important that those market trends. We just got brand new analysis over 2 weeks ago, right around the Thanksgiving holiday, that the current rents are starting to sustain at a certain level, not a pro forma level. Mm-hmm. So this gave us a big intel of information that we need to go back and say, hey, look, maybe we got in a little too aggressive. Maybe we're projecting this now. And so we went in to renegotiate and retrade our offer price to about 5.7. So wow, that's working in our benefit. And as you said, we're not going into for a low income Section 8 type of housing. We will be affordable housing there. I think we won't be the highest, you know, in our strategy goal. But I think for the most part, we're assuming an incredibly low debt, you know. And we're getting the property at close to a little over 40K a unit. So,
wow. Yeah, that's pretty, I mean, you know, that's actually pretty incredible. 40,000 a unit. You see a lot of deals that are at 100,000 a unit 2 years ago. And as you know, getting a little bit more deep here for our listeners who understand this stuff a little bit more, the cap rates, they're beginning to expand, especially in these tertiary markets like San Angelo, Texas, where this current deal is. Of course, there's competitors nearby in San Angelo. I'm sure there are that share this. But at the end of the day, I think this deal was purchased, was it in 2021? And they're looking to go through disposition in 2023. So they actually may be some of those people who overpaid for the deal and it's not panning out for them. So, you know, a lot of people got caught up in that and maybe you'll be able to benefit. But let's talk, Ken, about this deal and let's start from the beginning on how you found it and then the next steps in that process once you kind of thought you had one, you know, I don't know, trying to do a fishing reference here, but like you had one on the line, like, right. What, you know, what happens then?
In my experience, I guess, you know, it is fishing, right? You got to throw the line out there and be patient because you don't know when the fish is going to bite. So in relative to this story, I love analogies. We had been looking at this deal since November of last year. huge, like a whole year ago, you know, and we had made an offer. And honestly, they were trying to trade this property at $10 million.
And $10
million? $10 million a whole year ago to where we're at now.
Same owners.
They're having stress. Same owners. And we came in with an offer of what we thought was valid at maybe a little over eight. Well, we're
this
the
was,
bride.
This was a year ago.
This was a year ago. Yeah. We're bridesmaid, not the bride. We didn't win the bid. Somebody else did. Mm-hmm. But the deal came back to us. So this is something I would also encourage all of the members here is no matter what, submit that LOI. If you don't get it on the first, that doesn't mean they're closed. It might come back to you. And this is what happened to us. The broker seller didn't close on it, came back to us, gave us our reasons why. We did more due diligence, you know, and looking up, we restructured the numbers, re-underwrote the whole deal again. And we came up to what we countered. It wasn't even penciling at seven, to be honest, $7 million. So we came in at 6.25. We started going into negotiations. We won the award. We're at PSA. At PSA right before Thanksgiving, we were close to PSA.
And when we had the PSA purchase and sales agreement.
Yep. Yeah, I'm sorry, guys, if I'm using quick analogies. So during the ADP con, we were sitting on going to the PSA very quickly, which is purchase agreement. And we were sitting on that. And I just wanted to focus and try to share some of the wealth here amongst some of our members, you know. And right now, right after the holidays, we got new intel in the market study that said we're a little too aggressive. So we rebid, went into retrade. And right now, to be honest, what we need, if I may solicit, is to stabilize an experienced KP. Mm-hmm. That's where we're at right now. They didn't gawk at us, the seller, the broker, you know, I'm sure he didn't like the news. But I think for the most part on this deal, they're just willing to trade it out and get rid of the asset. They're starting to release all these assets, and this is like the last one they got. So maybe we can benefit from that. But right now, they want the experience of knowing that a experienced KP can get us past the finish line. And that's what they want.
Yeah.
They didn't even really banter at the depreciation of the $500,000 loss that we took off the price.
How do you become a successful military real estate investor? It starts with having a strong squad and trustworthy mortgage broker by your side. Hey guys, Kevin here. I wanted to take a quick break from the show to help you fill out your real estate investment dream team. Whether you're looking to fund your first VA house hack, close on an out-of-state turnkey investment, or just have a conversation with a lender who speaks your language, make sure you reach out to ADPI's team of qualified mortgage pros. With a full range of tailored lending options, our team is standing by to provide active duty service members, veterans, and military families just like you all the advice and resources you need to close on your first or next investment opportunity. Click the link in this episode's show notes or simply text DEAL, D-E-A-L, to 33777 to get connected today. Now, let's get back to the show. Yeah, yeah. So they're not really worried. And when we say they, we're talking about the current sellers. They're not really worried about you went down from 6.25 to 5.7. You looked at new data and you know, you're honing in more on your price. It's, you know, they want a team to be sure. Because think about it from the seller's perspective. And I think a lot of people in our community and others get this twisted. But like, we're so used to being on the buying side, but there's a seller's side too. And they've been trying, the sellers have been trying to get rid of this property for well over a year. So when they go and commit via purchase and sale agreement or they accept an LOI and then they go through that process, I mean, this could be 3 months, 4 months, 5 months of their back and forth and this and that, and they just want it closed. It's a commitment from their side as well as it is a commitment and a lot of work from the buyer's side to get everything together. So they want to make sure, what Ken's saying is they want to make sure that the team that is taking this over understands not only the risks that are involved, but has a strong capability of closing so they can move on with their lives and go on and do something else, the sellers. So a KP is that key principle and a key principle. It's another one of those members of the GP team that sometimes is required, but most of what the KP brings to a deal is experience and liquidity. So when you're going after a lot of these loans, you need to have a certain amount of liquidity. Your team has to have a certain amount of liquidity to get approved for the loan. And a lot of the times the KP will actually sign on those loan documents, and it could be recourse debt for them, and usually it is. And for that risk of having recourse debt attached to their name on the project, the KP gets a slice of the general partnership ownership side. So that's kind of how that works. So what Ken's saying here is you're currently looking for a key principle that can help you bring this deal home. And there's a lot of people out there who do this as side hustles or as full-time jobs. And they're just like, hey, I'm a, you know, high net worth individual. I work in tech. I do this, I do that, but I also KP on a lot of deals. So finding that person and showing them that you got this great deal in your business plan and having it all professional and sent out, it's just adding another member to the team and then negotiating how much ownership they're going to get. Like what's the KP going to get? And you bring that home, and then you bring that to the broker and the seller and your lender. And you say, hey, look, I got, here's the experience of the team, and we're ready to go on this. Let's move. Let's talk turkey. Let's talk terms. Mm-hmm. And that's really the next step. So yeah, I mean, dude, this is exciting to have to be very close here, and you're in a good position at $40,000 a door. What is most exciting about this particular deal, Ken, that you really think that it's going to be that's going to benefit, you know, you moving forward if you're able to close on this bad boy?
There's a lot, Kevin. The first one is the experience for me, right? I'm going to get the experience of getting that first property underway.
Yeah.
The benefit of that is maybe I don't make $1 million, but I tell you what, this deal, if you're forecasting, is going to open up the deal for the next deal, mm-hmm. and the next deal. And if you can get past that of, you know, I'm not trying to say be greedy. I'm not going to be a millionaire off of this deal. However, I can see a vision. I'm a visionary, and my vision is as soon as I attain this asset, it's going to immediately, which it already will, because we already have negotiations for the next deal right behind this deal for another deal with the property management. So the property management that we want to bring on had just hinted to us, Ken, we have another deal for you once we come on to this one that we're going to get you in cahoots with the owner of this other deal, which I don't want to give up that secret because then everybody would be in on it. But it's going to piggyback off of another deal. So the best thing I would say, Kevin, is if we can get this one across the finish line, then let's move on and get to the next one. So it's just about scaling. This is going to help me scale up to be successful, mm-hmm. you know, and that's ideally what everybody wants, you know?
Right. You get that first project under your belt, and then you get that stink on you, and people are like, oh yeah, Ken's a guy that can close. And let's see if he can handle this, or if he wants this opportunity or whatever. And it grows your network, and you know, everyone knows that your network is your net worth, and it's just an amazing thing to have a strong network around you. So yeah, I mean, man, that's crazy. And I think you know, speaking about this specific deal, did you say that it was assumable loan with low interest? Was that this deal?
It's
that's pretty interesting.
Assumable non-recourse loan, 3.56%, 2 years left on the IO, 10 years left on the term, and 30-year amortization. So yeah. When right now, I think, what were we looking at, Kevin? 8% right now in interest?
Yeah, something like that. Yeah.
God, I just underwrote a deal last night for 8%, and it was killing my numbers. It was killing my margins. Mm-hmm. I'm like, oh, yeah. Man, I was like, oh my God.
Is there a ton of value add in this deal that you need?
There is. We are planning 50%, which out of 142.76 units of renovations or rehab, there is at least 21% of increase into the rents, which is going to provide that. We want to maintain our exit strategy as well. We're considering a 5-year hold. We could go 7. Yeah, you know, everybody wants to refinance and sustain that revenue, mm-hmm. if it's that good. But we're thinking, you know, right now planning a 5-year hold. Our exit strategy is to leave a little bit of meat on the bones for the next potential buyer.
Okay. Yeah. No, I get that. Yeah. And you want to make it somewhat profitable for them as well. And so a lot of value add. So did the current seller on this, did they do a lot of value add on it, or did they get stuck?
Lipstick on a pig. They ran out of funds. The current owner mm-hmm. took all his money and put it in his best acquisition, which was not this one, and he mm-hmm. neglected it. So all they did was do some light paint, some very minor restripping on the parking and the asphalt. And then they just, they, I secretly walked the property. We're talking about 21 units that were vacant that immediately I can bring in a construction team from day one, get those 20 units turned around, get tenants in there in less than 90 days, and start stabilizing this project.
Yeah. And that's where your asset management experience comes in, where you can go and make this happen and you get the funding, you get the capital, you get the equity in the deal, and then you're able to go and put people to work and get this thing done and then get tenants in there that are paying at or near market rent. And there's a lot of vacancy with this, and there's just a lot going on. So definitely an interesting deal and very indicative of what's going on in the market right now. So people who are looking for deals, what advice would you give them if they're currently looking for these types of deals? Like, where should they look, and what should they what should they expect to find when they're looking?
Well, right now you can use LoopNet. I know LoopNet gets a bad rap, but there's still some stuff in there that you can find. I personally kind of use Crexy, which everybody uses. Mm-hmm. I found some deals in there. I use Graysteel. I go to some of the personal brokers' websites that they have their inventory and see what they're utilizing. Don't forget, you can do, what do they call it, where you drive around, drive for dollars.
Oh, sure. Sure.
You can do that. If you live in a major city, that's not bad. But if you're territory or your submarket area, it may not be the best. You can also look up some other resources where you can find owners, and you can, build bridges and do some cold calling respectfully. No owners like to receive a phone call on Sundays in the middle of an NFL game. So, try to do your due diligence, and you can have some success with that. But another good source is build a really good relationship with your property management entities and agents. They are their ground. The boots on the ground is there are soldiers. They infiltrate. They know the market trends. And they also know maybe here of when the owners are aging and it's their time when they're ready to release this property on some of the, on the projects. And they get first ins. So they have an incredible amount of intel. And that's pretty much where I've been successful for right now.
Yeah. And I would say don't sleep on property managers on the residential side either. I found plenty of deals that way of just talking to current property managers and saying, I think, they're my property manager and they're managing other people's properties. I'm like, I think that person might want to sell. Like, they've been hinting at it and all of this. And maybe I can connect you too.
I think that is a very viable source on the residential side, probably even more than on the multifamily. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It just depends on the size of that property management company on the multifamily side. Are they managing multiple different assets? Do they have ears to the ground? This, that, and the other. That could definitely help you out. Man, Ken, we've talked about a lot on the asset management side, and for you, I want to just dig in before we get to the bonus round, because I met you over the phone, and we talked for a while, and then I met you at ADPICon. And you had touched on it briefly that you were at ADPICon and this. What was your experience of going to ADPICon? And, obviously it was somewhat local for you being in San Antonio, but what was your overall experience with that? And would you recommend it? I'm not going to make you recommend it to someone else, but are you going to go next year?
I want to go next year. Absolutely. I would recommend it. That's the easy answer. And the valuable source for me, my mission, my focus was network, network, network. But that's because I have something on the table, right? Outside of that, experience and the lectures from the host that you had was valuable. I love that you had Rod Cleef on there. Man, who gets to see that guy? I did at the ADPCon. So that was great to hear him. It's tangible. It's not just like on a podcast or video, through YouTube. So that was great. You had some great educational speakers. And for anybody in the ADPCon village or tribe or membership, that's very important. We need to feel like it's tangible. My goal was to have a deal locked up in a year. I've surpassed that in the sense of more knowledge, experience. I had to be patient. The market a year ago was so, it wasn't loose. It was tight. Mm-hmm. I underwrote so many deals that I was believing that there was nothing left. I can tell you that now that the trees are bearing fruit now. So I'm starting to see more deals that are making sense to the point where I'm looking at, I was like, this can't be right. I gotta take it to
I gotta go run this again.
I gotta go run this again.
Profitable.
Right. Or I gotta take it to an underwriter so he can proofread it again, because I don't almost believe it, because I've been seeing such, forgive my language, trash over and over again. And even at that, if you could get it somewhat close, you know that the seller's not, it's still, the seller's still in 2020-21, you know, offers, you know, what he thinks he can get for the property. So do your due diligence, you know, but the value I had from ADPCon mostly was networking, meeting my peers, and the lecturers that you had there, that was really valuable.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's awesome. And I think getting out away, you know, from the, you know, from the computer screen and the Zoom calls and this, and getting in front of and actually meeting people. I mean, that was some of the best parts to me, because I got to meet some of the faithful listeners of this podcast. You know, they would just come up to me and be like, "Man, I listen to you every morning at the gym. Or I listen to, you know, you're in my ears all the time, da 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 da." And it sounds weird a little bit, admittedly, from, you know, being a podcast host, but ultimately they're listening because they, you know, everyone's listening to this because they want to learn, and getting to actually meet these people, our listeners, it was something that it's just so incredible for me to know that, hey, people are actually listening to this and they're getting value out of it, and they're taking that and they're moving forward along their real estate investing careers. And I think, have you started the Military Multifamily Academy, or are you starting in January?
Probably after January. Right now I'm just getting through all your your video Master MMA Academy. I'm going to finish that out by the end of the year, get them all done. I've already kind of had something like that, but it's so refreshing to go through y'all's educational MMA on the Academy. So it's nice. Kevin, you have presence, and you're right. You're in everybody's ear. So respectively, just understand this, that you are making a difference for all of us.
And, love that, man.
And please understand that for us to be successful, we need the ADPIs to have our six, period, in a subject. Just like that. You know.
Yeah. And that is 100% where we are going with ADPI Campus and making the platform that is completely focused on your success. And we're only growing that. We're about to launch, for members or for listeners who don't know, we're about to launch a complete like ADPI local worldwide. And it's all going to be held on campus. And we're going to be doing like, everyone will be able to call in and have that networking, the kind of that local feel, but wherever they are, whether they're going to real life events or coordinating real life events, or they're not able to go and they could just log into that real life event while it's happening and see all the people that they know, like, and trust in, you know, whether it's in Hawaii or Guam or wherever. I mean, people are just, there's so many local meetups and it's really, really exciting to see that grow, and just the ADPI campus community and where we're going. There's just so much, you know, more impact that we can make. And we're all striving together. Ken, you, me, everyone, we're all striving together to impact 3 million military families over the next 10 years. And we are well on our way. We're going to be a household name, and we're going to be, you know, speaking on military bases, and we're going to be like everywhere. Like, it's just going to be the thing you do. And we have some really exciting partnerships coming up too, that I think in 2024 are really going to propel us into the stratosphere as far as getting our message out there and really growing. So if you're a faithful listener to this podcast, you are in the early stages of what ADPI is and can be and will be. And we're excited that you're listening. And you know, we hope that you're in ADPI campus as well, because it's a really cool place to network, and I love everything that's going on in the Circle app. But Ken, it is time to get to know you a little bit more and take you to the bonus round. Are you ready, sir?
Yes, sir. Let's do this. Always
all right.
Ready.
Same four questions we ask each and every guest. Question number one: what book or software is really helping you crush it lately?
Oh man, I just finished the Awaken the Giant by Tony Robbins. Stay motivated, stay positive, right? That's something. And to be honest, I used to not be very into that guy, but I had a reason. My wife used to work for him and be his events coordinator. Yeah. So I kind of knew that guy when I was in the Navy in
you were like, Tony's going all over the world. Tony,
You know, and so I didn't really, you know, I knew him, and my wife is like a golden ray of sunshine from California. She knows all of this, right? So, but there, it was an awakening, and I found the book very able to help me focus and stay vision. However, I will say this. It's not mainly the software. It's just, there's a guy named Neil Bawa. I don't know if you know who he is.
Oh, yeah.
He's a numbers crunching guru on analysis and for asset management. He has taken me in the last 3 or 4 months from wow to oh my God, yes. And I've really been focusing on some of the keen insights he's helping me in resources, data analysis to really target in what our offer should be. And that's me on the acquisition side. On the back half, I can go to the asset management of, you know, what he's sharing in his data analysis toolkits are and say, hey, look, you know, I need this to for my asset manager's business plan to strategize for what we're going to do on the first year, how we got to stabilize the property. Year two, we're finally cash flowing. 3, 4, 5, our debt service should be high and we should be ready to go. And this should be ready for an exit stage in 5 or 7 after the property stabilized and pay all my LP investors. So I've really kind of been following Neil Bawa. And
yeah, he's incredible. That's awesome, man. Yeah, and it's crazy that your wife worked for Tony Robbins. I mean, that must have been a trip. Question number two, who's your biggest hero and why?
Biggest hero and why? Well, that would definitely be my mother. I mean, why not, right? She, I would tell her such crazy stories of what I want to do in my life. And she would be like, yes, baby, that's good. You know, just be the best you can at it.
That's right.
Just keep going, be the best at it. So, you know, I just figured that as long as I could get to somewhat of the finish line, it wasn't so much that I could master be the best, even though she wanted me the best. It's just get to the finish line, learn your lessons in life, you know? And outside of that, you know, I was a good kid, man. You know, I wasn't the best kid or the smartest kid. I just use this motto, which is FIO, figure it out.
Figure it out. Yeah, FIO, figure it out. There you go. I was trying to figure that out in my head. I was like, FIO. Oh,
figure it out, man. Figure it out.
I'm going to have to get the bleep button ready for this. I don't know. question number three, Ken, what do you like to do for fun?
Oh, man. At this point, I love to watch my young ladies. I have 2 daughters grow. One of them has all my talents previously as a musician. She's playing with the Central Texas Philharmonic Orchestra as a cellist. Wow. She's talented. My other one happens to be a competitive swimmer. So, I mean, outside of that, this is going to sound so boring, but I'm enjoying my time crunching numbers and reading the stories of these projects. That's what
that is boring.
That is boring. You guys, man, that guy's bored. Go get a life. But, you know, I've done so much, you know, and right now I'm trying to pursue generational wealth, right? I want to be able to know that when I go 6 feet under, I don't have to worry about the family, the kids they're taking care of, man. That's my why, right? You didn't even ask that, but that's my why. So it's important to have that. And, you know, I love the beach. I'm a Navy guy. I love the sea spray in the air. If I get close to the beach, I'm a happy camper. You know, I love to eat. I'm a foodie. What can I say, man? Forgive me, guys. You know, I'm gonna blow up, but you know, and I'm easy, right? I'm just easy. Comic book easy, man. Easy to read.
That's great, dude. All right, Ken, arguably our most important question. Question number four, you've shared a lot of nuggets already when we're talking about asset management and your experience with HUD and then the IRS and where you're taking your multifamily team and project that you have under contract now. But if you could boil that down into 3 nuggets for our listeners who are maybe trying to get started in multifamily, maybe they're in the Military Multifamily Academy right now and they're waiting for their cohort to start in January, February, or March. And they're like, man, what should I be doing with myself now? What are some 3 golden nuggets that you think that they would get value out of?
Okay. I really have this in my head for some of the novice new people coming in. If you're going to get into multifamily, figure out that role. First of all, you need to figure out whether you want to do residential, multifamily, or both. I'd probably advise to stay disciplined to one. And when you decide, and I will strictly favor MMA, which is our multifamily side of family, figure out your role quick. Because honestly, and this is no pun intended, I've talked to a lot of our members, and maybe 30% of our member base is just like, well, I don't know yet. You know, I haven't figured it out. I'm going to go through the cohort. Mm-hmm. You have to at least figure out what your strength might be and really try to hone in on what you need to do to fulfill your GP role with a group. I know ADP Ion is really big on funneling a group into a team, because you need a team to bring one of these downs. I agree. But you don't necessarily need three AM guys and one person that can underwrite, right?
Right.
You got to be able to filter out what roles you are to be successful. So it doesn't mean you have to have all four, but you need to at least be able to either tag team two or at least identify one and be somewhat good at it, you know, somewhat experienced. If you're a capital raiser, which, man, let me tell you this, and you listeners out there, if you're a capital raiser, you are like the sub cook in the Navy, right? You're just popular. At 3 a.m. when you get off your shift and you're hungry, who do you think is going to make you a grilled cheese sandwich at 3 a.m? And that guy, the cook, becomes the most popular guy, the submarine cook. He's the most popular guy. I'm telling you, the kitchen's closed. You're not going to get anything till 6 a.m. But at 3 a.m. when you get off, if you want him to make you a sandwich, he's got you. And that's how the capital raise team is. Like, I was like, well, you don't know if you really need him right now, but all of a sudden you got a deal on the table. You got a $3 million raise. Who do you think is going to be the most popular in the group? So I would recommend that, you know, if you're not feeling comfortable with some of the other roles, maybe an underwriting, you don't need to be, you can find somebody who can underwrite for you. Deal acquisitions, all you got to do is type an email, pick up the phone, and build a relationship with a broker. That's how easy that is. There's a little bit more to it than that, but I'm telling you, it's not that hard to get into that role. Asset management, that might be the hardest role, but yet everybody wants to filter to the AM role. I think it does require some experience, because you got to really be able to target and funnel market trends and have an idea of what the risks are and what you need to do of the why. So capital raise might be yet the easiest and the hardest one, because if you have resources and you know other people who are looking to park their money somewhere, then you easily could put yourself in a role with the team as a capital raiser. And maybe you have five people that have, you know, somewhere to park their money, $50,000 on a 50BC or 100,000 or 506B, 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 506B That's my input is know your role first and then, you know, partner up, do your due diligence. And I fall back on this because this was mentioned to me and it just spoke to me, is invest in yourself, invest in your business, and invest in your asset. Those are the three I focus on. I'm at two right now. I'm hitting three to invest in an asset that I can try to get across the table. That's where I'm at. That's what I'll leave you with. That's pretty much it.
I love that. And the progress that you've made since we started talking like 3-4 months ago, I mean, you're a hard worker. And that's really, really important in this business to, like you said, identify what you're good at and then go and educate yourself and invest in yourself and trust yourself and, you know, go and get that mastermind membership and go and surround yourself with those people and get that education that you need, like get that stuff done and have somewhat of an idea. And you brought up a good point about having that idea. And that's, you know, in the cohort, it's super, I think it's like the first 2 weeks, that's really the main focus is taking the personality exams, matching you up with what you think that you might be good at and then giving you the specific education that you need to go and follow on and learn more about that specific role, because there are these different roles. And if you don't know what you don't know, and you know, everyone knows that you can't be, you know, a master of everything and then know nothing, right? Like jack of all trades, master of none, right? So yeah, having that foresight to try and get ahead of that is, I think that's going to be really, really important moving forward for you, which you have honed in on, which is amazing. But for anyone else trying to get in the multifamily space, just super, super powerful to know and say, you know what, this is my lane. This is my lane and this is what I'm going to focus on. And yeah, that could be really, really exciting. Man, Ken, this has been really, really cool to get to know you even more and understand. For folks that want to get in touch with you, maybe they want to learn more about this San Angelo, Texas deal, how can they have a conversation with you? And
you can just find me definitely in the member.
In ADPI campus.
In ADPI campus, right, you can reach me there since that's who our targeted audience is, unless we're going nationwide. Kevin, you might be that big already, dude. I don't know, man. You're on the Kevin Brenner
listen,
tour in USA.
Listen,
you know?
people listen from all walks of life here. But yes, if you are... So if you are in ADPI campus, definitely it's super easy. Like you go to ADPI campus, you go in and you click on members and you search Ken and boom, send him a DM. Just like that.
Yeah, just like that. And if not that, I'll solicit this. Catch me at my snows REI7@gmail.com. And you can reach me that way direct. Email is quick.
snowsrei7@gmail.com. Guys, we're going to have his email in the show notes. So if you forget it or whatever, and you're like, man, I need to contact Ken, but I can't remember what I was going to do and all this stuff. Two ways. One, go to ADPI Campus, find him in the member directory. Super, super easy. That's why ADPI Campus rocks, because all of our members are there. Or just click on the little email link that's going to be in the show notes below this episode, and it'll pull up email, and you go and email and send him a note, say, hey, heard you on the ADPI podcast and you were incredible, and I want to learn more about that San Angelo deal, which is exciting. But remember, you got to play by the rules, and you have to understand how these raises work and all of this stuff and this, that, and the other, and you can't advertise it publicly. So we are not advertising anything publicly here. All we're saying is that Ken is going to be open to having a conversation with you. And if you end up talking about that deal, great. If you end up talking about the weather, that's cool too. It doesn't really matter. It all starts by establishing that pre-existing substantive relationship. And once you do that, capital raising becomes really easy. So that's my capital raising tidbit for you, in case anyone from the SEC is listening. Ken, thank you so much. And I'm going to want to hear more about this deal and getting it as you prepare to get it across the finish line and hear your experience. Maybe we're going to have you back on and see where it goes in a couple months.
Yes, sir. I appreciate that. Thank you, Kevin.
All right. Thanks, Ken. See ya.
All right. Have a good day, guys.
Another amazing episode in the books. Thanks so much to our special guest, and thank you for listening. Don't forget to tap the subscribe button now to make sure you don't miss an episode. Or head over to our website at www.activedutypassiveincome.com to grab all of our free resources and discover how you can get started on your financial freedom journey today.